When writer John McPhee arrived on the Yukon River in the mid-1970s, he encountered men and women living as far from civilization as they could manage. Many had settled on federal land, but their cabins, trap lines, and mining claims were so remote they escaped the government's notice. But as McPhee documents in his book Coming into the Country, this was all about to end. Yesterday we heard the story of a husband and wife who opposed the changes that took place when the area became a national preserve. Today, we're hearing from a couple McPhee encountered on the Yukon, and they have a different take. Elizabeth Harbaugh has the story.
For a decade, beginning in 1974, Steve Olvey and Lynette Roberts lived hundreds of miles from the nearest city in a cabin they built near the Yukon River. When I ask Steve and Lynette how they did it, they answer without hesitation.
Stubbornness.
I was going to say the same thing.
The two arrived in Alaska when Steve was just 23 and Lynette 25. They were college dropouts and hippies, although they prefer the term counterculturalists. Inspired by the works of Henry David Thoreau, Edward Abbey, and Dick Prenicky, Steve envisioned a simple life connected to nature. Lynette had no such vision, but she was in love with Steve.
I wasn't going to let him go alone. If I was welcome, I was going to go.
Things weren't easy at first. They scraped by in a 15-by-15 cabin with Steve's brother. There weren't as many animals to hunt as Steve had guessed. And Steve says there was something else about the country they weren't entirely prepared for.
Winter is the dominant feature, and it drives everything else. That was something that no matter how much you might read about it or how much you might think about it, there's nothing that prepares you for that day in and day out.
That first unglamorous winter, broke, cold, and sick of being the only woman around, Lynette got fed up and left. She ended up in Tok, not having the money to go further, and picked up work at a cafe. But after getting a little space and time to herself, Lynette went back.
I think Steve was quite shocked to see me because he thought I was gone for good, but it just didn't seem right that I would leave for good.
Over the next 10 years, the couple learned to trap, planted gardens, built up a dog team, and made their own clothes. Eventually, Lynette and Steve had two children. Lynette says living in the bush made them a stronger family. As time passed, she came to love living there as much as Steve.
It became my life, and I was there because I really wanted to be there, not just because that's where I was.
John McPhee encountered Steve and Lynette 2 years after the couple's arrival, when they were just getting the hang of things. In Coming into the Country, McPhee introduces Steve as a cinematically handsome man, helping another river dweller, Dick Cook, load up a canoe with supplies. It was spring, and the Yukon was roiling with giant chunks of ice. McPhee was standing on the riverbank when the two shoved off and watched as a massive ice floe hit their canoe.
Blood ran out of Cook's face. His skin became as pale as the floes in the river. If more ice were to strike the canoe now, it would crumple up like an aluminum can. Olvey wrenched the bow free and shoved the canoe backward. Once more, it floated among the ice.
When he reflects on his near-death experience in the icy Yukon, Olvey says McPhee played a bigger role in the scene than the book lets on.
Dick Cook loved to talk, and of course McPhee's job was made easier the more somebody talked. And so I'm in the bow, so McPhee and Cook are talking and talking and talking. And I think that what happened is that Dick just got a little frustrated and just kind of gave us a little shove with his paddle, and we slid down the ice floe into the water at exactly the wrong time.
Even though McPhee's reporting nearly saw Steve meet a frigid end, he is full of praise for Coming into the Country.
He captured it exquisitely. I just can't say enough about how well he did at capturing those feelings and that sense of change.
Steve only gets a few mentions in Coming into the Country, but he was swept up in the changes McPhee chronicled in his book. In the 1970s, oil started flowing down the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Soon after, Congress inked the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act.
I call that the great partitioning of Alaska occurred in the 70s and into 80. And in some ways, I also feel that that was the end of old Alaska.
Many of the river people McPhee had profiled found themselves living in a national preserve. After years of successfully avoiding government interference, they started to receive trespass notices and began clashing with federal officials. At first, Steve and Lynette stayed out of it because they had settled with permission on native land. But in 1981, Steve took a job as a park ranger for the Yukon Charley National Preserve, and so began
many years of controversy, of not being able to attend local parties without the topic coming up.
People who had built cabins on federal land now needed permits to live there. Those permits were gradually phased out. Hunting and trapping were allowed to continue, but new rules and limits were enforced. Steve says he understands why people were upset, and he doesn't agree with how all the regulations were carried out. But in the end, he also doesn't think the Park Service deserves all the animosity it got.
I've often said, you know, you can get in more trouble stepping on a person's dreams than you will stepping on their reality. And Alaska is a dream landscape.
Because the area is a national preserve, Steve says that dream landscape has been protected. Today, visitors can come to the Yukon-Charley National Preserve, take a canoe down the river, and enjoy a wilderness that's mostly unchanged from when Steve and Lynette arrived there in 1974. And Steve says that's something to be proud of. From Alaska's Energy Desk, with help from Eric Keto, this is Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.